Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This is Both Kinds of Sports, where we cover and analyze the NFL and the NFL offseason.
Here in the prime of the NFL offseason, in between the draft and the all-important schedule release. I just saw the mouse again, Tor. God damn it. It is Both Types of Sports. We're broadcasting live from the Fortress of Solid Dudes, presented by Monk's Barbecue in Percival. I'm your host, Chad Dukes. That is Gigantor. There's a tiny little mouse running around the goddamn studio. Like Muad'Dib. This is a powerful name. Fucking Dune is the shit. I love that voice they use when they tell people to do things.
Oh, the Bene Gesserit voice?
Take off your pants! Fez, you're not going to leave the studio and take off your pants, are you? All right, why does mine sound like Vince McMahon? No idea. Today on the program, Matthew Collar will join us, Purple Insider. Covers the Vikings, has written books. How's JJ doing? That's the big question up in those, in that neck of the woods. But also, he's not exactly the biggest Kirk Cousins fan, and I think it'll be fun to pile on because tormenting young Gigantor about his bum team is always enjoyable. But let's start at the beginning, Tor. Here's like some film that's built up on top of this goddamn iPad. The schedule release is happening on Wednesday. Are you aware of that?
I knew it was coming out recently, or even soon.
We have some details. The biggest, though, dropped today. Adam Schefter reported that the Kansas City Chiefs will host the Baltimore Ravens in the kickoff game of 2024. That will be on a Thursday. It is a rematch of the AFC Championship game, September 5th, 8:20 kickoff. Kind of late. On NBC, the Chiefs, of course, won 17-10 in Baltimore. Warren Sharp noted this. Gigantor is one of the pieces of intrigue. Lots of intrigue around this game. Hollywood Brown playing his old team. Derrick Henry gets his Ravens debut against the defending champions. You got a couple of quarterback MVPs there. But the Ravens lost in that game, the AFC Championship game, by 7 points. No Ravens running back had more than 3 rushing attempts, despite the fact that Kansas City ranked 28th against the run. Yet that entire game, no Ravens running back had more than 3 attempts. Warren Sharp pointed that out immediately, which is the difference in the game. I think we both acknowledge that.
Yeah, excited to see the rematch. Baltimore seems to take the regular season seriously, so I appreciate watching them. Then postseason, the collapse comes. But the Chiefs, they lost last year in the opening week. They lost to Detroit,
yeah.
And that was a pretty big tone setter for the Lions, I believe, moving into the rest of the year. I think if Baltimore pulls it off, it'll be less of such of being in that club now. But it's a good game to open up the season. I think I'm mildly interested in it.
My tweet and comment was looking forward to Baltimore winning that game week one by 24 and then getting knocked out of the first round of the playoffs. It's one thing about the Chiefs, man. You can say that they take weeks off or they don't play with urgency at the beginning of the year. Well, when it's nut cutting time, they certainly know when to step it up, as we saw last year. So we've been getting dribs and drabs of the schedule leaking out. We know about that game. Also, the Philadelphia Eagles will host the Green Bay Packers the very next night tour, Friday night. First time there has been a Friday game for the NFL since September of 1970. I did not know that. Also, that game will be played in Brazil, which is interesting. I wouldn't want to do that if I was one of these teams. I wouldn't want to play on Friday in Brazil, but they're going to do it. We also know that they will play five international games in 2024. The Jacksonville Jaguars will host a game at Wembley Stadium in London. The Chicago Bears and the Vikings will host games at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. And the Panthers will also host a game at Allianz Arena in Munich, Germany. Very interesting. Some of the opponents will be revealed on Wednesday night. During that, we're also going to have three Thanksgiving games once again. Detroit will have the early game, Cowboys the late, and then the night game is usually the best game out of that slate, I think.
And then we also get Christmas games, and then on Netflix also.
Well, has that been confirmed? I know that the report
was... There were discussions about Netflix.
Yeah. I don't know. I've got no problem with that. Everyone has Netflix. I think we all know eventually the NFL is going to be on streaming, as everything eventually will be on streaming, so... Yeah, I love it. The big source of debate seems to still be oversaturation. I know Mark Cuban went on that jag a while ago. It has not been the case so far. The NFL can't give enough of its product out. I think you saw that with the draft in Detroit, the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
This schedule release on Wednesday is a big deal. And you're seeing that every year as you get one or two games leaked out ahead of time. The NFL is incapable, as of yet, in my opinion, of spreading itself too thin.
You could put a game on every night in the week, and every night of the week, that'd be the biggest thing on TV.
Oh, by far.
It would dominate Monday, Sunday to Sunday.
What show on Wednesday night is going to beat Vikings-Bears?
Fuck all.
Nothing.
There's not one thing that I'd watch over Vikings-Bears.
It's not just us. I mean, of course, we're going to watch. We're football fans. But no singing, dancing show. No CSI, no Chicago trash department. None of the garbage that people watch on network TV is going to touch it. And much less these shows that people prattle on endlessly about, like Ozark or whatever trendy show that like 3 million people watch it and they want to dance with Jake in the street. 30 million people watch these games.
Right.
Get fucked. Put them on every night.
Still.
Yeah, put them on every night. And I got to say, the schedule release, I get as excited about as any offseason activity.
I love the COVID year when games are getting flexed everywhere. I love that.
I love the COVID year. Isolate that.
Maybe I did.
It will be interesting, too. That'll be the first chance we get to have a look at this new reinvigorated Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver core. I think that Derrick Henry's going to be the big story in that game and how he works in the backfield with Lamar Jackson. But they got a bunch of short, fast guys that, at least – are going to make the comparison to Tyreek Hill, stretching that offense again, which is something the Chiefs struggled to do last year.
It's going to be a Pacheco, 86 yards on the ground, a touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and right back on track, maybe.
Probably. But maybe not. They've proven to themselves they don't need to be sharp early, which is very frustrating.
I'm starting to buy more and more into your theory about the Cowboys and Dak Prescott, how they're not trying to – they're trying to force Dak into earning that big contract. Mike McCarthy, Cowboys to have running back by committee approach in 2024. That's what a quarterback loves, not having a strong, capable running back to take most of the handoffs in the backfield. It's going to be Ezekiel Elliott and Rico Dowdle, joined by newcomer Royce Freeman. It's a terrible running back room.
It is, Torin, and we lose perspective on this because of the recency bias, but I keep the NFL Network on in the background at my house. Like when I leave the house, I don't want my dog watching something stupid. They just play football games all day.
Yeah.
And what they were playing this morning before I left was that wild card round game where the Packers went into the AT&T Stadium and put the foot to the Cowboys. And I forgot, because if you look at the final score, it was like 48-32.
Yeah.
Because Dak had a bunch of garbage time touchdowns. They went in there and beat the shit out of the Cowboys. And that was that game where Aaron Jones had three touchdowns, was averaging almost 6 yards a carry. He's with Minnesota now.
Punished him.
I can't believe Mike McCarthy didn't get fired after that. I really can't. And I'll go back to saying what I think all in is. When he said we're all in, on finding out if Dak Prescott is a $50 million quarterback.
They're all in on the new era. And this is the last chance for McCarthy and Prescott. I think if they're going to I think Jerry Jones is looking at it. He's got one more rebuild left in him while he's still functioning at the top of this team, making decisions. I'll give both these two bozos one more year. And if we're gonna figure out if they can do it or if they can't. If they can't, then we'll tear it down, rebuild it. But God, that's a bad running back room. They're gonna do bad this year. They're gonna do bad in the NFC East.
Derrick Henry was available and wanted to play for the Cowboys.
Yeah, that should tell you everything you know or need to know.
They don't mind blowing money on running backs. They've done it the entire time that Jerry Jones has been. They're like, what the fuck happened, Tor?
You let Saquon not only leave from the Giants, but leave from the Giants to the Eagles, not to your team.
Well, I mean, think about it. Austin Eckler was available.
Yeah.
I mean, go down the list of running backs that found a new home this offseason, and guys are getting paid, too. I don't know how this is what they ended up with. And it goes to the thought they're sending a message to Dak Prescott, is if you need to elevate. We're not elevating you anymore with all these amazing skill position players. You're going to elevate these guys if you want to be paid like these elite quarterbacks.
We've been nailing it with the offensive line. We got you a true number one wide receiver. You got to do something here. And maybe he needs more, but when he's had more, he hasn't done more. So it's at least a new approach that I'm starting to at least pick up a pattern of. They did draft two very good offensive linemen this year, though, in the first and third round. But what are they doing with that? What does it matter?
Joe Mixon moved this offseason. Zach Moss. I mean, just go down the list. There are
Singletary moved.
There were very functional running backs that were available. And
Aaron Jones moved. The guy that torched you in the playoffs.
That murdered your fucking season.
You're not better than him, so you might as well extend an invitation to come join.
Romeo Doubs, by the way, 6 catches, 151 yards in that game.
Yeah.
And you remember, the Packers took the foot off the accelerator like midway through the second quarter, it felt like.
What a great game.
It was a lot of fun to watch.
I told so many Cowboys fans when they were trying to, that week before, when the Packers were playing to see if they were playing like the Lions or the Cowboys. They drew the Cowboys, and Cowboys fans were cheering. Like, why are you cheering? Last thing you want to do is let a young quarterback come in here into Dallas. You take them lightly, and he beats you, and that's exactly what he did.
Well, that fan base has been delusional for quite some time. They don't seem to be anymore. Like, they really seem to grasp the quagmire that they're in with this potential group. But a message to Mike McCarthy or anybody else on that offense. Ezekiel Elliott had 876 yards in 2022, 642 yards in 2023. Ain't nobody suffering under the delusion that guy's going to come in here and be your workhorse. So I don't know that even needs to be said. I'd almost prefer, Tor. I know we're supposed to move on after I hit that thing. I almost like this Cowboys version better than one that's like 2-15 or 2-14, whatever it would be.
Oh, just constantly fighting with themselves?
They got talent. They're all like, they get all the coverage. People just know you're gonna get all the coverage and you're gonna fail miserably in the postseason, and it's gonna cut the heart out of your fucking arrogant ass bandwagon fans all over the country. I almost prefer this as someone that has no love for that fan base,
because it's not just wait till we get good again or wait till we get this again.
No,
you got your guys. All right, and they're better than our guys, and you're still losing.
And you still can't figure out a way to make it work. And how do you not fire your head coach after that display at home? Holy shit. Patriots have a new head coach, Gigantor, Gerard Mayo. He was asked on his first impressions of their first-round pick, Drake May. They had a mini camp. And Gerard Mayo seems like he didn't pull any punches. He said, look, he's got a lot to work on. A lot to work on. But I have no doubt that he'll put the time in. You don't see him. You didn't see him at her yesterday, but he was out here all night trying to get on the same page as everyone else. The only compliment given was the fact, hey, he's really trying hard. This is very, very difficult because of those top three quarterbacks. This was the one that required the most curing still.
Yeah.
And he's going to the worst of the teams that were drafted. Washington is better than New England. And of course, Chicago is better than New England. Alex Van Pelt was brought in. I think what they're doing that's smart is you don't want to overpopulate the voices in the young quarterback's ear. You really need to have one or two guys working with him, because a lot of times when you see they go off the rails like Carolina, it's because there's too many voices inside the locker room. So Van Pelt's going to be the guy working with him, just focused on him. They also drafted Joe Milton, Tor, who they seem to be pretty high on. Bailey Zappi is still there. I imagine they're only going to carry three quarterbacks this year. So Jacoby Brissett gets the start. On top of that, the entire left-hand side of the line is going to be rookies, per report from Mike Rice from ESPN. Wallace was drafted and Robinson was drafted. These are third and fourth round picks. These are not first round picks for guard and tackle. It's going to be a really tough season, and I think you go out there and you start 1-5 and the fans aren't coming out, and you're going to be tempted to throw Drake May in there. I got to say, Tor, I don't think he should see the field this season.
Let him rest. Maybe give him a little bit in week 17, 18.
Garbage time.
Real deal garbage time. Like, this game does not matter. You go out there and just show us. I mean, if they start 1-8, but I don't even want him going out there then.
I don't either. Especially if they can't protect the quarterback.
Save it up. There's too much risk. Because I do think when he's NFL ready, he will be a guy in the NFL. I think I really like.
He's so big. That sounded weird.
He's got the frame. He's got the arm strength.
Don't isolate that. Yeah, but it's the worst spot for him.
It's a terrible position.
They needed a quarterback. And, like, you know, at least with Bo Nix, Sean Payton's there. They've got some weapons. They have a defense. He's going to have to play immediately, too. You drafted the one guy that can't play immediately, and I don't know. I think that what also is somewhat refreshing to see, at least for me, Tor, teams don't do this anymore, really. The strip down, we are going to fucking blow this year. They don't ever admit to it. The Patriots are going to be the worst team in football.
Terrible.
And I think they're resigned to it, and they're like, look, we just can't have this guy get chewed up like chattel. While we're going through this process and adding pieces. So
you shouldn't. I think he could be a very good quarterback in the league. Not this year. It is not. You cannot throw him on that team in that. I mean,
playing Buffalo twice.
Yeah,
playing
you
Miami
want Von
twice.
Miller and Ed Oliver just annihilating him in the pocket.
I don't want him seeing the field. I mean, unless there's some sort of leap when he's running the scout team, you're like, oh my God, this guy's really, you know, the game's starting to slow down for him in practice. Let's get him out there. I just don't see that happening.
Take your hits now. Take him in year five.
Yeah.
Take him on your second contract.
At least year two.
Yeah.
At least wait till year two.
Year two. It's the second year of the Lions selling out their season tickets.
Good for them.
Sold out in 2023. They made the NFC Championship. 2024, if I would have guessed, they would have sold out. Impressive. Detroit is on the rise still. I'm glad we were tracking it last season. I think they're my favorite for the NFC North, and I'm excited to ask Matthew Collar about it later. It might be back. Football really might be back in Detroit.
The only thing that's concerning, Tor, is that they had so many track meets last year where you feel like you should win this game. You're scoring 33 points, and your defense is letting a team roar back into it. I hate to say this because he's such a great success story, and it was so cool to see. I think it was Amon Ross St. Brown started the chant. I forgot who it was, but it was Megatron and Barry Sanders, all those guys out on. They're starting the Jared Goff chant. That's such a great redemption story that Jared Goff was basically thrown in and, like, you have to take this guy's contract because we want Matt Stafford, and he had a great year. The Jared Goff factor still looms. And if you're not going to play defense well and you're going to be in track meets, I just think at some point – he's going to throw a back-breaking pick, and that's going to be the way their season fucking ends.
I think it's been a bummer for him because when he went to the Super Bowl with the Rams, their defense was good enough. Their offense wasn't. And now in the NFC Championship last year, the offense was good enough. The defense wasn't. If they can give Jared Goff both, he could be a quarterback that I think wins the Super Bowl. If it's one or the other, he's maxing out at a Super Bowl loss or an NFC Championship loss. He needs both. And Detroit is trying to make efforts to get the defense right. They should. But it cannot be the theme this year of, oh, Detroit's got a huge lead. It's over.
Right.
When are they coming back, though? You know they like to let them back in it. It can't be that if you want to really be making a push.
They bring in Marcus Davenport. What is it? Amik Robertson. DJ Reader gets a two-year deal for $27 million. I just don't see – Aiden Hutchinson is a potential defensive MVP. They draft a corner in the first. They go back into the top of into the first round. I don't know that they've done enough on that side of the football, but they got a great home field advantage. They're well-coached. They play exciting football. If they can stay healthy, yeah, I like them in that division. Problem is, Tor, that division is a fiery crucible. The bottom two teams could be 500 teams.
Right.
At the bottom of that division, it could split with anyone else, Green Bay or Detroit. And I don't know how good Green Bay is. I think they come back down to earth a little bit after the way they ended the season, but maybe they don't. Maybe Jordan Love is Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre and Bart Starr in the next line in this great legacy of Green Bay quarterbacks. And if he is, they're going to be good for the next 10 years.
I still don't have a feel on Matt LaFleur and whether or not he's going to do some dumb shit in a game that cost the Packers a big win, or if he's this genius that people think he is. I don't have a great read on the guy, because I think Rodgers muddied up the water a lot.
That was a muddy situation.
Yeah.
Going back to Rodgers, I can't believe how little we've talked about the Jets this offseason with him coming back to play football for them.
I think we got burned out last year because everyone was so excited.
I think you're right. But that was a Jets team that played hard all year, played defense all year, and if they had a quarterback, they would have made the postseason. I mean, it wasn't until nut-cutting time where he decided, statistically doesn't look like I can push it to come back, because that narrative lived for much of the season.
They might have beat punk-ass Buffalo in the playoffs. God, did they lose favor with me quick.
Buffalo is the Dallas of the AFC.
Oh, it's such a bummer, because I really wanted to like Buffalo.
Diggs going, not being a part of that team, is going to hurt them more than they think. And then who did they bring in and give to Diggs' number?
They drafted Keon Coleman.
I know, but they brought in like a Jag fucking look that up, because it was a huge slap in the face. And I'm not even – you know, we did that special when he got traded. I'm not the biggest fan of the way Stephon Diggs conducts his business, but
– the Buffalo's new receiver room now features Mac Hollins, Falcons legend, Curtis Samuel, Commanders legend, Khalil Shakir, Justin Shorter, KJ Hamler, Andy Isabella.
Now, they brought somebody in and made a big deal out of giving him Stephon Diggs' number.
Gotcha.
You got to be better at the Google machine, young man. Was that yours? You're talking about the Lions. All right, while you're looking that up, I can tell the good people that Raheem Morris is high on Kyle Pitts. That's right.
Oh.
I find it.
Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It's terrible.
That's awful.
Didn't the
Buffalo, you should be ashamed of yourself.
I know we're doing a lot of slurping about the Bears, but didn't they give up like a fucking second round pick for Chase Claypool? And then he caught like three balls and then went to Miami. Somehow he couldn't catch balls in Miami.
Buffalo, you should be really ashamed of yourself.
I told you it was
number.
Embarrassing.
That is, Claypool is a fashion model. That's his career after football.
Well,
but that's it.
And also
he stinks.
You don't make a big deal out of giving him Diggs his number too. Like, it'd be one thing if you went out there and you were able to bring in one of those Los Angeles wide receivers, Mike Williams or Keenan Allen or somebody.
Sure.
Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts hasn't necessarily lived up to the lofty expectations one would assume you're going to have, Tor, when you're taken fourth overall in 2021. Is it his fault? Who knows? But Raheem Morris said, quote, "If we can get this guy going, we all know what he could be. That's the job of the coach to find out whether a player can go out there and get the best out of him. Hopefully myself, along with the staff and all of our coaches, can get the best version of Kyle Pitts, because that will be really good for all of us." They picked up his fifth-year option, which guarantees him $10.9 million base in 2025. You would assume that they still have lofty expectations for him if they're willing to pay him that much money. Here's the problem I have, Tor. If this was Tony Gonzalez or Antonio Gates or Rob Gronkowski or, you know, Jimmy Graham, I don't know. I don't know. I think if you are an elite tight end, you go out there and you can make plays regardless. George Kittle made plays if it was Jimmy Garoppolo or Nick Mullins or whoever it was in San Francisco. I think that Cousins can get a good season out of him, but if you're truly elite, it's not his fault that the Falcons drafted him fourth overall.
It's the Falcons' burden now. If you really look closely at the games, you could see that he was making some – you got to look real closely – some plays that elite tight ends would make.
Sure.
But a lot of it is also – a lot of the spectacular catches from Kyle Pitts, whatever you see from the highlights on SportsCenter, it's all recovery for the quarterbacks. It's, oh, he jumped up so high to catch this ball that was clearly overthrown, or he scraped it back off the ground. I'm just waiting to see what he can do with a quarterback that can hit him in the chest. Because right now, he's not an elite category for me. He's not a dependable guy for me, because the offense isn't centered around him, and they can't find a way to get a tight end, which is the mismatch nightmare. That's why you even have the position on the team, a mismatch in the end zone.
I don't want to compare Kyle Smith to Rod Gardner, because I don't think that's fair. But you're talking about a receiver that showed you every once in a while some unbelievable athleticism. You're like, oh, it's there. We just got to get the right quarterback to get it out of him. Sometimes that time never comes.
Yeah.
And you're talking about either a rookie or a guy with a bum Achilles. There's going to be built-in excuses this year, despite how they've, you know, how much they've invested in the quarterback position as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm rooting for him because a big, tall, athletic tight end is one of the most exciting mismatches in the game.
It should be, especially with a guy that runs as fast as he does.
Yeah.
And when he does catch a ball, it does look exciting. He's got his long arms wrap around it. He tucks it. He's fast.
And him with Bijan, like, I mean, there's just so many mismatches that could be created with the athleticism of the guys you have out there on the field at the same time. They just cannot somehow figure out a way to make it work. But Raheem Morris he's excited.
I appreciate it, Raheem. Hopefully you can get him involved. I've got a bit of a social media grievance tied into my final story.
Social media grievances.
Shu, do you think Ladd McConkey is the next Cooper Kupp?
I saw that. I saw our buddy that we follow. Who's our guy?
Ryan Roberts.
He had a great tweet. Yeah. Went viral as fuck. It sucks that it seems like you could only compare white wide receivers to other white wide receivers.
Yeah. I mean.
Well, go ahead. I'm stepping all over the tweet.
You have a limited scale when you're judging wide receivers, especially white wide receivers.
Short knockers.
There's not as much of a sample size.
Sure.
So more often, lazy NFL media will just compare a white guy to another white guy.
Yeah,
and
it was always Wes Welker.
Yeah, Wes Welker. And this is, I think it could be pretty tried and true throughout most races that have played football. But now we finally have a dummy that we get to pick on. NFL notifications on Twitter.
Who the fuck is that?
At NFL Notify, just a terrible NFL aggregate account. And then in about 3 months when the season starts up, he's going to have a name as a media personality. But right now, it's just NFL notifications.
Okay.
It's just gross football media aggregate.
I didn't even know that was going on.
It's a terrible subsect of NFL media.
What is the tweet that he's getting cooked for?
The tweet was just a clip of Ladd McConkey running a drill. Ladd McConkey looks like a young Cooper Kupp out there. Surprised face emoji.
A young Cooper Kupp as opposed to the slow, broken-down Cooper Kupp that we saw fucking roasted people last year after he got healthy?
It's a terrible tweet.
And then Ryan Roberts, I believe it was, I get it,
yeah,
he's white.
Yeah, we get it, he's white.
Yeah, it's kind of painfully obvious. It's the same way where, like, people would want to compare black quarterbacks 10 years ago just to other black quarterbacks, even if they're like, Russell Wilson's game was nothing like Randall Cunningham's game,
right.
You know, but people have to just get out of that paradigm.
It's just more laziness, and then, laziness, and then one of, I guess, our guys had a good quip back.
Oh, yeah? Who?
Ryan Roberts.
Oh, yeah,
that was the gist.
I was a big Wayne Corbett guy back. I do like the 5'8" slot white wide receiver that runs a slant route over the middle and fucking gets hit the numbers and like it's crisp routes, good hands. The stereotype is one that I like because also it's very rare. Very rare.
I was a fan of the even more rare jump ball Brian Finneran go-getter.
Oh, my God. I used to love Brian Finneran. I had a Brian Finneran jersey.
I think I begged until I was crying for my parents to buy me a Finneran jersey.
I had a Joe Juravicious Tampa Bay Buccaneers jersey. You know how rare that shit was? Joe Juravicious. What's he doing? Get him on the show.
Oh,
I want to talk to Joe Juravicious. Yeah, well, I mean, if you're a white kid and, like, you need someone to identify with that plays wide receiver, it's Slim Pickens. It's Ricky Prohl and then not a lot else. Breaking news tour. As we are recording this, Antoine Winfield has just become the highest paid defensive back in NFL history.
Wow.
$84.1 million 4-year deal. It's the first time in modern NFL history that a safety has set this mark. It's a $45 million guaranteed deal, the most ever for a safety in the history of the league. Very interesting, Tor. I saw the, I think it was the general manager of the Buccaneers that was talking about how completely disrespected Tampa Bay is and how they use that to their advantage. He's absolutely right. I mean, they've won the division. I know Tom Brady was there, but they're competitive. They play defense. They were able to reload. Mike Evans is finally getting some acknowledgement that he's a Hall of Fame wide receiver at this point.
Yeah. Tampa's been way less irritating than I thought they were going to be post-Brady or even during Brady.
Yeah, yeah. I like them more now.
Yeah.
Because I think they're more plucky. They're more of an upstart. They go out there and they ball real hard. And
they have talented guys. A lot of good dudes on that defense and the offense. I really like Baker running that offense last year. It's just a great – It's a very fun NFC South team.
This offseason tour, the Bucs have given Antoine Winfield 84.1, Baker Mayfield 3 years, 100 million, Mike Evans 2 years, 41 million, and Lavonte David, linebacker, 1 year, $8.5 million. You would assume an extension for Tristan Wirfs is on the docket next, but why wouldn't you work to retain this team? They're competitive. The division's a goddamn trash heap.
Anybody could win it.
Also, Tampa Bay could fuck around, get a bye maybe, get a home game. You find yourself in the divisional round. Maybe you find yourself in the championship round without Tom Brady. Why not? Why not aim for that?
I think they should. They could win the division again next year. Kirk could be a dud. The Saints could still stink.
The Saints are an abomination.
The Panthers could get 3 wins, and then they could have 10 wins and win it. Or they could have 8 wins and win the NFC South.
At least the Panthers are just atrocious.
Yeah.
I have no idea what New Orleans is doing. I have no idea the direction that they have decided to take.
This is a fun time for me, for watching them just continuously. It's like an eternal, you know those eternal stews that they go, they just run forever? I love this right now.
What are you trying to be? You signed who? How is that going to help you? It's very weird. Very weird to see, man. Are we good?
I have a couple quick updates.
Quick
on
hitters?
On Jervicious.
Oh.
The last two.
Hold on. He played a year for the Browns. I know that much. But I was a big Joe Jervicious Buccaneers guy after he left the New York Giants.
The last two personal life notes on his Wikipedia page here.
Yeah.
In September 2018, Jervicious was robbed at gunpoint in his house at Gates Mills, Ohio. The robber, Robert House, was 24, later found guilty. The defendant had notable outbursts at his sentencing. And then,
okay, I'd like to see that outburst.
Jervicious owns a commercial cleaning company and laundry business named The Clean Group, which is headquartered outside of Cleveland.
Book him!
In March 24, The Clean Group suffered a major fire.
Oh! What's going on with Joe Jervicious?
Jervicious has had a tough couple of years.
His chi is off. What's up with his quan? His karma is not where it needs to be, Gigantor.
I'm hoping he's doing well. But that's
all right.
That's 2 months ago.
He's pretty athletic. You know, it was a big disappointment if you're interested in white wide receivers. Matt Jones, big disappointment. Remember him? I might be getting that name wrong. Who's the kid? He was drafted by Jacksonville. He's a quarterback from Arkansas. And they shifted him.
Oh, my
to,
God. It's Matt Jones.
Matt
Jones, parentheses, wide receiver. This is.
I always thought he was going to be. I mean, well, him, Terrell Pryor. I've got a big problem.
I thought Terrell Pryor was going to really.
When the Redskins signed him, I had the biggest boner in my pants. Whenever they take a quarterback and make him a wide receiver, I get a big old boner. And I wanted that. I thought that guy was going to. I think he had like 8 touchdown catches with the Browns that 1 year. Something like that. He had some crazy number, and the Redskins signed him. I'm like, we're going to the Bowl. Didn't work out. I was also a big Braylon Edwards guy.
I was a huge Browns Braylon Edwards guy.
Yeah. That was before Kellen Winslow Jr. lost his mind, and he did the whole I'm a soldier bit. That was rough.
Browns had some bad years. They had some real bad years. Yeah, they're doing better now.
The Derek Anderson, Braylon Edwards, Kellen Winslow Jr., Lee Suggs years, I was all in.
Oh, Lee Suggs. That's a fucking pull out of the back of my head.
Love Lee Suggs.
Oh, what am I?
I think Barty had a girlfriend fuck Lee Suggs or something. Do you remember that? Lee Suggs! Oh, my God!
Oh, my God, it's Lee Suggs!
Do you remember that?
That is...
What was that story?
Oh, you're
you gotta look up that story. Yeah. I could talk about Joe Jervicious. But your boy Brian Finneran, did he go to Tampa Bay too after he left Atlanta?
Oh,
I forgot where he ended up.
Gosh.
It may have been in Detroit.
It might have been Detroit.
Because he was a big, tall guy too.
Yeah.
It's even more rare when you get the Shea Whiteys that they're years of the 5'8 quicksters. It's rare you get one that can play on the outside.
He went started with Philly.
Brian Finneran did?
Philly. His first year in 99, and then. Was with Atlanta until 2010.
He had a 1,000-yard season in Atlanta. I guarantee it. Did he have a 1,000-yard season?
2002, he had 838.
Oh, that was it?
6 touchdowns.
I think I picked him up on fantasy that year, and I got all boned up.
56 catches.
That ain't bad. Was that his best year?
That was his best year.
Oh. Oh, we really were overestimating him.
He could jump out the gym, though.
Yeah, he was athletic. Did he finish his career at the
Falcons? Retired in 2010 as a Falcon.
God bless him. Yeah. All right. Speaking of retiring as a Falcon, I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to do it.
No.
Joining us the Monk's Barbecue Hotline, purpleinsider.com, Matthew Collar. Not only talk about Cousins going to Atlanta, but how's J.J. McCarthy looking at those mini camps up there in the Great White North? We'll get all those deets next.
Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The best barbecue in Virginia can only be found at Monk's Barbecue in Purcellville, Virginia. Check them out at Monk's BBQ on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and at monksq.com.
It is Both Types of Sports, the show that covers both types of sports, the NFL and the NFL offseason. Presented by Monk's Barbecue in Percival. Joining us on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline, our old friend Matthew Collar from purpleinsider.com. You can get his book, Football is a Numbers Game. On the internet, I would type in the name and then purchase it. And then, of course, his podcast, wherever you find. Fine podcastery. Matthew, always great to catch up with you, brother. How are you?
Oh, I am doing good. I got to tell you, whenever you can react, way overreact to a rookie mini camp, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, when the video on YouTube for the rookie mini camp reaction is now the highest one I've ever had, I think it tells you how much Vikings fans couldn't wait to move on from a certain 500 veteran quarterback and onto something new in J.J. McCarthy.
Let's talk about the $100 million winning percentage quarterback. And I don't remember if I've spoken to you. I don't think I have since the draft and that whole thing went down. There is a baseline level of buffoonery that I associate with the Atlanta Falcons. I just think they're not a serious franchise. And there's a couple of those that you can throw in there. I put Washington in there. There's a couple of them that you just say, like, they're going to fuck it up because that's what they do. Giving Kirk Cousins with a blown Achilles $100 million, you could make an argument that's pretty silly to begin with. But then on top of it, to immediately, I don't think Kirk did anything wrong here other than what he always does, which is look for the bag, which he got. Drafting Penix, and I know people have then come out and kind of gone against the current and swam upstream and made arguments that Dan Orlovsky is one of the guys that seems to be doing quite a bit of it. It's one of the more buffoonish moves that I can recall. And as someone that's covered Kirk for, you know, the duration of his Minnesota career, is your opinion on that whole ordeal changed over the past couple of weeks?
Well, I'll tell you, on draft night, I was as shocked as anybody. I mean, I thought that Dallas Turner was going to be an Atlanta Falcon, and that made a lot of sense to me, or maybe Roma Dunze, and then all of a sudden it's another quarterback. So I guess I stand on both sides of the fence here, because in one way, yeah, it is just hysterical to see a team spend that much money with an owner that's his age, and you can kind of put two and two together, right? Where they said, is Kirk Cousins really worth it? Probably not. But Arthur Blank would really like to get back to the playoffs here at his age and give his team a shot. Plus, look around that division and tell me who else is supposed to win that division if they even get halfway decent quarterback play next year. So if Kirk is even just regular Kirk, he could win 11 games for them because he's got the weapons there. It's a well-built roster outside of the quarterback situation. And you could make the case that if you put a young receiver, a young edge rusher over the next 2 years of that contract, while the division is still down on its luck, that you're going to give yourself a chance to go into the playoffs as an intriguing team. And drafting a quarterback kind of feels like it's punting on that opportunity a little bit. But I would also say this, that I don't think that the Atlanta Falcons were able to stick that leg in an MRI machine until he actually signed with them. And I did wonder, because sometimes when an NFL team does something crazy, you're like, okay, maybe they're just insane, like drafting Daniel Jones sixth overall or something like that. But I also thought, well, do they know something? Like, do they know that Kirk Cousins' leg is not going to hold up for a couple more years? Like, there's a world where Kirk Cousins plays this year and is just not recovered and isn't good. And then they're looking around going, what do we do now? And next year's quarterback draft class isn't that good. I heard great things about Penix throughout the I heard that anybody who met with him was wowed and blown away by Michael Penix, including the Minnesota Vikings. So I guess I could put it together where I could see it working. But of course, it really feels more like you're probably drafting the quarterback for the next general manager and head coach when you do something like this. But I don't know. I mean, it's like, because it worked for Jordan Love and the Packers, everyone wants it to work the same way here. Maybe it will. I don't know. I feel like with things like this, we always kind of think we know how this is going to play out. And then Kirk could just be terrible because he's old and his Achilles just ripped apart, and they might feel great that they drafted Michael Penix. So I'm not really sure how it's going to play out.
With the report that came out after that, you know, the Vikings did what I would consider to be the honorable thing and said, hey, look, we're going to draft a quarterback here. You're, you know, getting to a certain age and your leg is where it is. And Kirk, you know, there's a report Kirk didn't like that. And that's one of the reasons why he ended up in Atlanta. And then, of course, Atlanta calls him as they're on the clock and says, hey, we're drafting a quarterback, because that's what a garbage franchise would do. That's my opinion. If Kirk knew that they were going to take Penix, do you believe he's still in Minnesota right now, even if they wanted to draft J.J. McCarthy?
I think it was about the dollars in that one. And I think that the Vikings, what they try, I don't want to call it sandbagging, because I'm not sure it was entirely sandbagging. But we'll put it this way. The Vikings had a price that they would pay for Kirk Cousins, and that price was really nowhere near what the Atlanta Falcons were willing to pay. I don't believe that the Vikings wanted any commitment from him at all. They wanted to sign him to more or less a one-year contract, and as you mentioned, they wanted to draft a quarterback at the same time, and they wanted to split the difference. They've called this entire thing a competitive rebuild, and I think that's what they really wanted to do, was have J.J. McCarthy sitting behind Kirk Cousins next year while they chase a slightly above 500 record and maybe slip into the playoffs, because that's what their owners really want. But I also think that they weren't heartbroken when it happened, because, well, A, the owners don't have to pay more guaranteed money for a first round out in the playoffs or just missing the playoffs. But also it gives them an opportunity to now make their next quarterback their guy entirely and put all of their focus into J.J. McCarthy. They hired Josh McCown to basically be the quarterback whisperer, to work directly with him. Kevin O'Connell seems like a kid in a candy store. Now, he's loved talking about all the different things that they're going to try to do to help J.J. McCarthy. They seem really excited about the situation, and it just is a totally different feeling amongst the team and amongst the fans here to have put all this effort into a new quarterback that has, you know, maybe higher potential than Kirk Cousins. So, you know, I don't know. I always felt like the Vikings wanted to make sure that publicly they didn't offend Kirk Cousins, because you know, I don't know. That's like how they do things now. Like before with Mike Zimmer, he would just say, I hate that guy. And it was fine with him. He just didn't care. But Kevin O'Connell really, really cares about how he's perceived by the players in the locker room. The players did buy into Kirk Cousins over the last 2 years. at the behest of Kevin O'Connell in ways that they never did under Zimmer. And so I think that they didn't want to look like they were talking out of both sides of their mouth. But I don't think they ever really wanted Kirk Cousins back. And so they were never going to go to that number mark that Atlanta went to.
Do you think it's because O'Connell is a part of this Shanahan cabal where it's like all these guys have come from the same McVay? And of course, you talk about Cousins was the guy that they drafted that they wanted because they, you know, Snyder made the RG3 push. Is it because O'Connell's a part of that group and anyone that's in that group is going to get a little bit of extra care? Because, I mean, there's this enormous coaching tree now that has come out of the Kyle/Mike Shanahan group that was in Washington. I mean, we get that little graphic every single offseason about how many coaches were a part of that staff and now find themselves having success in the league. Do you think he's getting extra care because O'Connell and Kirk kind of come from the same feeding ground?
Yeah, you know, O'Connell's an interesting guy to look into his background and try to pick apart where his philosophies have come from. Because, of course, I mean, coming from being Sean McVay's offensive coordinator and the connection with the Shanahans, I mean, they all have a certain way of kind of thinking about the game and thinking about quarterback play. And I do think maybe they go a little too far on the idea that you can just download the game plan and then play it like a video game with the quarterback. And I think Sean McVay did figure that out with Jared Goff. Like, oh, maybe we need a guy who can make a freakish no-look throw at the biggest moment, you know, in his career or something. And I think that there's a part of Kevin O'Connell who thinks that about J.J. McCarthy and his arm strength versus Kirk and wants somebody who will take a risk and make a play. And they've referenced that enough times about, well, you know, we need somebody to make a play when things break down. And you're like, oh, yeah? Who didn't ever do that? But, you know, I also think that Kevin O'Connell in his overall philosophy, he was drafted in the third round himself, and I think he felt like the NFL kind of failed him as a player or made his track much harder. Like, I don't think he believes he should have been an NFL superstar, but just that he went through some things. He was drafted by New England. He went to the Jets. Those weren't really quarterback-friendly situations at the time. You know, he's behind Tom Brady, and then he's playing with Rex Ryan. And I just think that he believes that and he said this before, that teams fail quarterbacks more than quarterbacks fail teams. I don't actually agree with that myself. I think quarterbacks, if they're great, they make teams. But the fact that he says that makes you think that, like, he wants to create this environment that is going to give J.J. McCarthy every single opportunity under the sun to succeed, which definitely works to his favor, as opposed to, hey, kid, you just go save the franchise and I'll be over here worrying about the defense, which is kind of what Mike Zimmer would be doing. So it is, but it is interesting to pick that apart of like how this, you know, Kevin O'Connell approaches these things, that he is a player at heart. And I think that's why the locker room has really, you know, embraced O'Connell. It's why the NFLPA survey, they come out number one or number two the last 2 years, is because he's thinking so much from a player's perspective and putting himself in that helmet, that I think it connects extremely well with these players.
Matthew, is Sam Darnold going to be expected to do anything that Sam Darnold hasn't done in the NFL? Because it seems like he gets brought onto a team, he's named the starter for about a month and a half, and then he gets usurped by a younger quarterback. Is it going to be more of a mentorship or open competition? How do you see him shaking out? Because he was their offseason ad before McCarthy.
So if you know Vikings history, Vikings fans are expecting him to go to the NFC Championship at total random. Because it is interesting about Sam Darnold, though, because I don't know if he's going to pull a Jeff George or a Case Keenum or something like that. But, you know, you can always do this where you go, hey, the last 17 games of this guy or whatever. But in his last 17 games, I'll just do that. He's 8-9 and he played OK. Like, he wasn't as bad as he played with the Jets. And then when you think about coming from a year of sitting there in San Francisco, learning their offense, understanding their philosophy, coming here, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, Kevin O'Connell wants to throw the ball. Like, you could see a world where Sam Darnold is the best version that Sam Darnold was ever going to be. But I went back and watched some of those Carolina games, and he's a wild ride, man. Like, people always give Jameis Winston Like, they always talk about Jameis Winston for this, but Sam Darnold's the same way, where he will make the best throw you've ever seen and the worst throw you've ever seen on back-to-back plays. I don't know that there's any reining that in. Like, coaches always think that they can. So I think with Darnold, he could start off really hot and we go, oh my gosh, did they waste the first round draft pick on JJ McCarthy? And then he could lose the next four games in a row and throw 15 interceptions. Like, that's just who Sam Darnold is fundamentally. And I think one of the difficult things, because I don't believe they want JJ McCarthy to start in week one. I think he's the youngest quarterback that was picked. He was playing at 20 years old last year with Michigan, 21 now. So he's not very old, and he's clearly raw from what we saw at rookie minicamp. But if Darnold really struggles, that's where it's going to be difficult for Kevin O'Connell, because the locker room's then going to start saying, hey, you know, we got to go to the other guy because Darnold's struggling and we're losing. And then the owners start to, you know, put that pressure on as well. And that could be an interesting situation. But I don't think it's crazy to think that if Sam Darnold had to start the whole season, that they could be a wild card team, just because the circumstances are so good here. Like, you get the best wide receiver in the entire universe. Like, that's a pretty good start for him. But I don't think that there's some situation where they suddenly go, you know, 13-4, and then we're all talking about that they have their franchise quarterback in Sam Darnold.
Yeah, but I do get the vibe with the Vikings a lot where, I mean, it was Brad Johnson and Dante Culpepper and Randall Cunningham. I mean, you're throwing to Randy Moss and Jake Reed and Chris Carter and handing the ball off to Robert Smith, and he's going to get you 1,300 yards. I don't know. I feel like Gardner Minshew could sit there with that group they have and get them 10 wins. It's just such a, you know, the pass catchers and the line, and it's all there. And if you're a competent NFL quarterback, and I think Darnold can be a competent NFL quarterback, I think you should find success with that group, should you not?
Yeah, I think so. And even just looking at the way he played in his one start in San Francisco, and I know, like, we're talking super small sample, but it's not like this guy is just a bum or something. Like, he can play NFL football, and the fact that he's willing to take risks and take shots is going to be, I think, refreshing, considering Kirk Cousins was never willing to do those things. And I think that what Vikings fans are looking at is strap in for the wild Sam Darnold ride while it lasts. It probably won't last that long, but would it be, yeah, that's the thing, is like, would it be crazy, especially since Brian Flores has added on the defensive side? Is it crazy to think that they could have Darnold look pretty good and compete for a playoff spot? Like, I don't think that's crazy at all. The division is really tough. Green Bay's tough. Detroit's tough. I wouldn't be terribly shocked if Caleb Williams was pretty good right away. So that's going to make things hard. Their overall schedule is pretty difficult this year. So it's hard to say that they could be really good under Sam Darnold. But if he is competent at all and just throws to the right places most of the time, they have, I mean, there were moments that, like, Nick Mullins last year threw for 400 yards in two different games last year, just aiming the ball somewhere in the general direction of Justin Jefferson. And I was talking with someone high up with the Vikings at the owners' meetings, and I said, like, that was Justin Jefferson's Mona Lisa, making Nick Mullins look really good, because that guy is like a UFL caliber quarterback. So I really do think that it's reflective of exactly what you were talking about, like, back in the day, where anybody could kind of show up and Gus Frerotte could put up big numbers, yeah, by just throwing the ball, you know, toward Randy Moss.
Love Gus Frerotte. PurpleInsider.com. I saw that how did JJ look his debuting over there. We have a rookie minicamp in the books. Let's play it for the first time on this show, Matthew. How did JJ look?
I would say that, yeah, they should get the gold jacket ready. You know, here's one thing that stood out. And this is what's nice about having a body of work of, I've stood on the same hill at the Vikings facility and watched training camps and everything else. So I have a good frame of reference for just watching players from that vantage point. I don't think I've seen a player throw a football as hard as JJ McCarthy since I've been covering the team. Sam Bradford had a cannon, but he was a little on the older side by the time he showed up here. I mean, was it going in the right direction all the time? Not really, but you could see the raw talent that everybody talked about when they say, like, he's going to need development and things like that. But when he drops back and lets the ball go, if he's throwing like a 15-yard out or something, it gets there super fast. And what I noticed about him too is that he's a lot bigger than he looked on television in Michigan, because I, you know, get a chance to interview him and stand up close to him and see how he looks on the field with other players. And you're like, that guy was kind of looking on TV like this slender kid. And I think he's probably put on 15 pounds, which we all did at 21 years old, of muscle, right? That was what we all did, putting on 15 extra pounds. Yeah. But I mean, and the other thing you notice about him too is that he's 21 going on 32, like right. with his, the way that he acts in front of the media, around other people, out on the field, is disturbingly mature. I like, where was this for me? Like, I didn't act like this when I was 21 years old, and I don't ever see rookies act like this when they're usually kind of like a little, you know, struck by the whole thing, or maybe they're way too overconfident and then they get quickly humbled in the NFL. But he is a really great communicator. I think he connects with people extremely well. And you already saw that in just the first day of how the team was looking to him. And I thought, like, well, look, he's got those things that everybody talked about for the reasons that they liked him in the draft. He's got the strong arm. He's clearly athletic. He's certainly big enough. And you can see the kind of magnetism that he has about his character. But I also saw him do the same thing that I do with my five iron, which is I saw some balls in the woods. God. I mean, there was a deep ball that the other day when I was playing golf, I hit it over the green by about 40 yards. And that was like what his deep ball was, overthrowing a couple receivers. He had a little slant route that was supposed to put some touch on the ball, and he just threw it as hard as he possibly could, like Brett Favre style, trying to break the fingers of the receiver. And what you see is this is a quarterback who's going to need time. I mean, it's not like Jaden Daniels, who threw, I don't know, 1,500 passes or something in college. He threw 700 passes. And I just feel like they are aware of this, but you can see all of the talent. Like, it doesn't take effort. You don't have to go, well, you know, if you look this close, like, no, you just stand there, watch him throw the ball and go, oh, okay, I get it.
Matthew, between the Lions and the Packers, which team do you think has a better chance of regressing this upcoming season? The Packers kind of came out of nowhere last year with Jordan Love, had a playoff win, and the Lions made it all the way to the NFC Championship game. Which of the two do you think falls off, if there is any fall off?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it a hot take to say neither? The thing with Jordan Love, and there's a lot of coping going on in Minnesota about this, because, I mean, dealing with, for Vikings fans, Brett Favre, and then when that finally comes to an end, you think, oh, okay, it's over, the nightmare is over, and then Aaron Rodgers is torturing you for many more years to come. And then Jordan Love shows up at US Bank Stadium when he came at the end of the season and threw a 50-yard touchdown off of his back foot with pressure in his face. I just went, uh-oh, yeah. it's happening again. And the thing about Jordan Love that impresses me so much is how he dealt with that, because at the beginning of the season, the first time we saw him, the Vikings defense annihilated him. And it was like, all right, we're going to see some real adversity here and how he battles through this, because he was not having a good time at the beginning of the season. And what he did was he found a way to improve, to fight through it, to not get down on himself. I mean, you know, when you saw Justin Fields and he was having a bad game, like that guy wants to be home. Like, he doesn't want to be here anymore. He doesn't want to be playing. I didn't see that from Jordan Love. I saw him fight through that. And then he's got a rocket arm. He's a big giant dude. And the real concerning thing for the, you know, everybody else in the North is Matt LaFleur's really good at his job, because they altered that offense to fit Jordan Love. And then they found some receivers, you know, second round guy here, you know, undrafted guy over there. And that, like, now they've got a pretty good group. So I think Green Bay is going to be probably as good or better. The Lions, where I still don't trust them, is on defense. I know that they drafted a cornerback in Terry and Arnold, who I liked a lot, but they signed Marcus Davenport, is supposed to be the answer. If he plays six games, I'd be surprised. Yeah. I just feel like their defense is still a major weak point and doesn't scare anybody, which means they have to be a top five offense in order to be dangerous. So I could see that drifting back just a little bit. But I actually think both teams are really fantastic and have good chances to be where they were last year.
The Bears being the X factor, they came out, of course, named Caleb Williams their quarterback one, as if that needed to happen. But them being able to land Rome Odunze after, you know, they already had two number ones on that squad, and now they have tight ends and receivers, and they're going to be able to run the football, and they're going to – they have a quarterback that you assume – this is not a Drake May type. This is a guy that you're expecting to go in there and perform immediately. They were a problem at the end of the year last year. I think they're going to be a problem this year. Doesn't it take a little time, though, for the slow cooker to simmer? I would be surprised if this is an 11-win team this year. Where do the Bears slot into this division?
Yeah, I think that if we're sort of guessing the most likely outcome, it's that they're – maybe actually similar to last year in total team strength. Maybe they're like an 8-win team, but by the end of the year you go, oh man, next year they're going to the Super Bowl. Yeah. Like that tank and rebuild. I mean, is there one that's been done better recently where not only do you tank, but also you set yourself up for a tremendous prospect at number one? You spot the mark in Carolina to trade with, and then they just hand you on a silver platter the number one pick. And then the Montez Sweat deal I thought was brilliant, because before, you know, Montez Sweat was there, their defense just didn't have a whole lot of guys you ever heard of on the defensive line. And then, well, yeah, I mean, you guys know this, how good he is. I think he's underrated until they picked him up and paid him a huge amount of money, then not underrated anymore. But he is a huge difference maker on that defensive line. Like, everything kind of starts there. He's not quite what Khalil Mack was for them, but you see the same sort of impact, the attention that he has to get, and that allows Eberflus to do what he does on defense. They got linebackers. They've drafted a bunch of secondary guys that are pretty good. They were able to keep Jalen Johnson, who's one of the best players in the league. Like, that defense is stacked enough to make them a difficult team just, you know, off the bat. I don't know. Like, is it at the level that Ben Roethlisberger, when he came into the league and took over that Pittsburgh team that he barely had to throw the ball and they won like 13 games or something? I don't think it's quite that level, but you talk about circumstances that quarterbacks get to go into. There has never been a number one overall pick that came into a team that has Keenan Allen, you know, that has, I mean, Moore and Odunze, and like that. I think their tight end is halfway decent. It's like, what in the world? They have just, Ryan Poles has done this masterfully. And I guess the only question is just, how good do we expect Caleb Williams to be right away? And I think physically speaking, the way he throws the football is miraculous. Emotionally speaking, I'm very curious, because that play, there's something to it. Like, that Chicago's a lot of pressure. I think it's a difficult market. And I also think that, you know, I'm not like one of those people who would say, oh, he cried on the sideline, so you can't draft him or something. But I would say that there were times I wondered about the pressure with him, that I think it did get to him at USC. And whatever you think is difficult in college, it's 20 times, 50 yeah. times harder when you get to the NFL. So there's a learning curve there. But if you were picking right now, 2025 favorite to go to the Super Bowl, it's probably Chicago.
Huh, interesting. And the division, such a meat grinder, too. We'll have to see what type of an impact that has on his development. At Matthew Collar, go ahead and follow him on X. PurpleInsider.com covers the Vikings. Check out his podcast. Always great conversation, Matthew. Thank you so much for the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to talk with you again, man.
Always great. How's JJ doing? Can't wait for round two when we bring him back on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline.
Thanks for listening to Both Types of Sports. Please leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you are listening to the show. And don't be afraid to share the show with a friend.